to thank our guest, Senator Dick Durbin, at a very busy time, taking the time out to join us this morning. So first off, Senator, morning. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. But, you know, a lot of people aren't right now, and a lot of things going on, and you and I are going to walk through the minefield together this morning. How's that?
Ready to go.
All right. Yeah, I should have probably used a different metaphor there. House impeachment vote yesterday, and 10 Republicans, and then the engrossment. First off, your evaluation of the House vote and the comments yesterday and the speed in which this is moving.
Well, I can tell you that having lived through January 6th in the Capitol and watched what happens, we have to speak out as a nation. This is unacceptable. What we saw in Washington was the equivalent of American terrorism. And I use that term advisedly. We had guns, we had pipe bombs, we had Molotov cocktails, we had people attacking the police, in fact, murdering one of the policemen on the scene at the Capitol in an effort to take control of the Capitol building and to stop the business of Congress and counting electoral votes. It was an insurrection. There's only one, that's the only way it can be termed. Those folks were invited to Washington by the president. They attended a rally. They marched on the Capitol. He bears responsibility for that.
All right. What did specifically the president do that you think constitutes incitement of insurrection?
He picked the day we were counting electoral votes because he has been pursuing this big lie since November 3rd that the elections weren't fair and weren't honest and that he actually won. He lost. And he lost by a substantial number, 7 million votes on the popular vote, and by the same electoral vote that he was elected. So it was, he called it a landslide then. We know, having gone through the votes over and over and over again, and his challenges in court being rejected over and over and over again, that it was a fair and honest election. And he continued to argue that it was not, and inspired these people to come in anger to the Washington, D.C. Situation and to march on the Capitol. He bears responsibility for that.
Senator, you used a really strong word when it came to the death of the police officer. I don't think I've heard anybody until you today describing that what happened to that police officer as murder.
I believe it was. And I think it was I saw the videotapes. They were taking fire extinguishers off the wall and throwing them at the police. There's a video that I saw of that. And I'm told that this policeman was hit in the back of the head by a fire extinguisher. We're waiting for the details to come out. I'm sure they're trying to figure out exactly who did it. But that's the sort of thing that was going on. Anybody believing that these people marching on the Capitol were the friends of the police are just plain wrong.
Yesterday, Nancy Pelosi, the engrossment by the speaker, that is the final piece of work, the final written word when it comes to the House impeachment. It's delivered to the Senate. We have a lot of action that's expected in a very short period of time with the inauguration next Wednesday. What do you expect to happen and when it comes to the Senate and impeachment?
Well, the timing couldn't be worse. We have a new president coming on. Joe Biden will be sworn in 6 days, along with Kamala Harris as vice president. And they want to move quickly on the coronavirus and getting this country back on track, getting well first and getting back to work and putting kids in school, the basics that all of us share, regardless of political party. At the same time, we've got this looming issue from the January 6th attack on the United States Capitol, and we have to resolve it. I believe we have no choice but to take up the impeachment issue from the House, and I believe the vote, the overwhelming vote that we saw yesterday, is an indication of at least what the majority will vote on in the Senate.
Surprised by McConnell, Senator McConnell, and his, do you think he'll vote to impeach, and what do you think the ramifications would be if he did?
Well, he came right up to the point of saying it and didn't say that he would vote to impeach. He said what the president did, called for in the people coming to Washington and marching on the Capitol. It constituted an impeachable offense. Let me tell you, I was with him. We were taken away from the Capitol being in leadership, away from the other members, and we were in, as they say, an undisclosed location nearby for hours on end, and I saw him. He was visibly shaken by what had happened in the United States Capitol. This man has given his life, some 50 or 60 years of his life, to working in the United States Senate. I spent a long time there, too. I take this personally, and I think he did. I mean, it was sickening to think that those images were being broadcast around the world. And I'm not surprised that he's had such a strong reaction against the president.
You know, it was an interesting question. I was watching news coverage this morning, CNN, and I wasn't listening, but I had it on and closed captioning running. And they posed a question, which I thought was very interesting. Will the impeachment affect the Joe Biden presidency?
I don't follow up on. I'm not sure what you're saying.
When I saw this question, they said, "Well, will the impeachment affect the Biden presidency, and how?" And I was wondering. That question just caught my imagination, and I was wondering what they were going for. I thought maybe you might have some thoughts.
Well, I can tell you this: Joe Biden has been very careful in his reaction. He has said this is Congress's decision, and I think for good reason. He wants to kick off his presidency by showing leadership and moving on the coronavirus issue. He said that in 100 days, we want 100 million Americans vaccinated. That is a big undertaking, and it could break the back of this pandemic over in that short period of time, a little over 3 months, if we are successful in achieving it. He's got a lot of things he's going to announce starting today on getting this economy back in shape. He wants to follow through with the promise. We wanted to give $2,000 cash payments to families. We agreed on $600. He wants to finish it up, $1,400 more in cash payments to families, putting people back to work, helping businesses, making sure we have the money it takes to distribute this vaccine. We're off to a very slow start. Illinois is a little better than most, but very slow start. And I'm sure he looks at this impeachment as a diversion. He wants to really roll up his sleeves and tackle those issues directly.
You know, it was weird. I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. Stopped by to see me here at the office, actually. And we were talking about the Georgia Senate race. And I said, so what do you think about the Senate Georgia race? And he looked me straight in the eye, and he said, Senator Dick Durbin is much more powerful today than he was yesterday. I thought that was an interesting insight. Do you think that's true?
Well, I've been given an opportunity to be chairman of the Senate Judiciary Committee. I've been on that committee for 22 years, wondering if the day would ever come. It's one of the most important committees on the Hill, and I'm also serving as whip number two in the Senate, so I don't like for assignments and responsibility and work. I just tell you this, I am encouraged by it, I'm motivated by it, but boy, it is an awesome responsibility. We could have a Supreme Court vacancy in a few months, you just never know. And we've got a lot of work to do, particularly on this issue of domestic terrorism. I've been pushing this issue for 8 years. Had my first hearing on domestic terrorism 8 years ago, saying to the Department of Justice, this is serious and it's getting worse. Now I think people are coming around to that point of view.
You know what's interesting is what I'm hearing, what I'm seeing our listeners and commenting after they're listening to us this morning and saying, look, we want to unify the country. We get this. But When it came to the Capitol, you know, everybody's so upset and they saw these things, but cities were burned all summer across this country. And aren't we experiencing a double standard? Look what happened, whether it was Portland or Chicago, and then what happened to Capitol. And I realize there's a difference, but some federal buildings were burned. There was an attempt to burn officers and lock them in buildings and burn them. Is it fair to compare these two items? Because we've seen, I can't help but wonder if sometimes the Capitol was not some type of culmination. One Democratic, matter of fact, from the governor's office yesterday, said the reason that we saw these riots in other towns was because they weren't able to get to Washington because they didn't fly. I wonder if you had a thought on that.
I just want to make it clear. I'm a Democrat. Everybody knows it listening. It follows politics at all. And you know where I come on the political spectrum. But violence, looting, and vandalism are never acceptable. Never. On left or right. Republican, Democrat, liberal, conservative. Never acceptable. So if anybody wants to draw a comparison, I'll say the same thing about the Capitol that I said about those who took the Black Lives Matter to an extreme and caused people to get hurt or damaged property and such. Never acceptable. The difference is this. An insurrection is when you set out as a group to interrupt or take over a government. When you have this crowd headed up to the Capitol grounds, with the ambition of stopping the government from counting the electoral votes, that is more than a protest. That is more than a demonstration. It has gone way beyond that, and that's why this is significantly different. I want to tell you, this place, this United States Capitol, for as long as we've had a country, has been a symbol of who we are, our unity, and our hope. That symbol was desecrated by those terrorists. I don't care what kind of flags they carry. Think about this for a second. In the Capitol, during the Civil War, the troops slept overnight. Some of them were taken care of in hospitals. Some of them died in that Capitol building fighting for the Union, fighting on the side of Abraham Lincoln. And now to have people parading in that Capitol with Confederate flags, I mean, it was just horrible to think that they would do that and believe that that was an expression of where we ought to be as a nation.
Before all of this happened, we were upset about money in this state of the country. $27 trillion in debt, yet spending large sums of money overseas. In particular, people seem to have taken exception to the money sent to Pakistan, which was a pretty good sum of money, $25 million in civilian aid package to Pakistan, among them women's rights, gender rights in the Asian country. And there was also some democracy components in this. In good conscience, a lot of taxpayers are saying, look, we're $27 trillion in debt. We're borrowing money to give to other countries. Why should we be doing this?
We ought to be careful of every dollar we spend, taxpayers' dollars. Those are hard-earned dollars by people listening to your show who go to work and would rather have that money coming back into their families. I can understand that. The amount of money that we spend in foreign aid, in comparison to other things we spend money on is not overwhelming, but every dollar ought to be measured as to whether it is a dollar spent that keeps America safer. The president made his foreign aid request. We basically gave it to him. It included aid to Pakistan. The next president ought to be measured by the same thing. Do we really need to spend that money, and how much should we spend? There's money that we spend in foreign aid to avoid spending money on the military in a war.
All right, here's the hardest question you're going to be posed today or any time in this current situation. All right, and I told you before on the air, I will literally, for the rest of my day, will be spent by people, one, accusing me of not being hard enough on you, and the others saying that I'm letting you off easy. I'm literally watching it right now happen to me, all right? It's going to happen. So how do you unify those? A person told me, said, look, if I went to a march today and there were one group was on the other and one and the left was on right on the other side, and I was in the middle saying we need to learn together and live in peace, they'd attack me. How do you unify a country in these circumstances with the rhetorics being so vicious as it is right now in both sides? How do you unify?
This is the most divided I've ever seen the country in the time I've been in public service, and that's a few years, as your listeners know. And, you know, I still am an optimist. I wouldn't do this job if I didn't feel that there was a good time ahead of us. We've gotten through so much as a nation. We're going through this coronavirus pandemic, and people are dying right and left, and folks are scared, and, you know, life is just not the same. Our kids staying home from school or falling behind in their studies, and we worry about them in terms of my grandkids. I talked to my daughter and my son about their kids and how are they coping with all this. This is a time of great stress and tension in this country, but I am optimistic. I'm positive. I believe we can come together as a nation that we have so many times and find the things that bind us in common, our love of family, our faith, our belief that the people who sacrificed and gave us this great country expect our generation to make sacrifices too. I'm optimistic, even though this is a pretty dark time.
I thought you might want to say something about the new Speaker of the House in Springfield.
Well, the day after the election, on November the 4th, I was interviewed by a television station in Chicago, and I said it was time for Madigan to step down.
I saw that.
State Party Chair. The next day, the governor joined me, and Tammy Duckworth did as well. That was November the 5th. Here we see yesterday that for the first time in 40 or 50 years, we have a new leadership in the Illinois House of Representatives. I know Chris Welsh. I've worked with him. I think he's a good person. I want to give him every chance to prove himself. And we have moved on now to a new generational leadership.
Before I let you go, I wanted to take the chains off a couple of moments when it comes to both of us this morning. Talk to your constituents today. Tell them what you're experiencing now in Washington, what you expect to happen in the days to come up to inauguration. What is it that's on your mind?
I tell you what, I'm saddened when I look at Washington. I can remember as a college student years and years ago, the free, ready access to the Capitol. Walk in anytime. Go anywhere you want. Nobody stops you. Now take a look at it. We have more troops now on the grounds. The Capitol than any time since the Civil War. It's an indication of what we learned on January 6th, and how vulnerable we were, how unprepared we are. I'm sorry that it's come to that, but that is what is the situation today in Washington and in America. We have to be careful. There are people who are misusing their authority, misusing firearms and bombs and the rest of it. It is a threat to all of us. We need safety in America. And I'm calling on all those, particularly, let me just say directly, when it comes to Second Amendment rights, I believe in them. And I want to say to your listeners, if you will own a gun and use it responsibly, store it safely, need it for hunting, for sports, for self-defense, I'm with you. But for those who are taking it to the other extreme, please step up and speak out.